Fish and fresh vegetables may sound like an appealing pairing for a dinner plate, but they can also be a great pairing in a greenhouse. This hour, we'll find out why that is. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Aquaponics brings together two growing elements of agriculture: hydroponics, growing crops without soil, and aquaculture, fish production. Aquaponics is growing crops with nutrient-rich wastewater from fish farming. Today, I'll talk with ISU Extension Fisheries Specialist Alan Patillo, and horticulturist Richard Duran will also be here to answer your questions. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Duran will be here in a few minutes to answer your questions. But we're going to start the hour with a topic we have never talked about on Hort Day before: aquaponics, growing crops without soil, but with nutrient-rich wastewater from fish farming. And with me now is Iowa State University Extension Aquaculture and Fisheries Specialist Alan Patillo. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And let's talk a little bit about the history of aquaponics. How long has this idea been around to combine aquaculture and hydroponics?
Well, as a concept, I guess it's been around for a few thousand years, but we lost it there for a while, and we've really been only working on aquaponics for the last 25 years or so, and it's really only caught on in the last 10 years.
What is the advantage of, I know that hydroponic production, growing plants, growing crops without soil, has been growing over the past decades, but what is the advantage of using this wastewater from fish farming instead of just water?
Well, there's a couple of advantages, one of which is that you get to produce multiple crops, which really helps diversify your farm income. And the other is that it can be organically certified, so you can reach a different target market that way.
All right, and hydroponic crops can't be organically certified right now?
As of right now, they are not.
Okay, and that's because of the additives that have to go into the water?
That's correct. Inorganic fertilizers makes it basically impossible to get organic certification for that.
You work with a number of people who are producing fish in Iowa. How big is aquaculture in Iowa? Certainly not one of the first things we think of.
Sure,
in the state.
Yeah. We have definitely less than 100 producers. That list sort of tends to fluctuate year to year. I'm thinking we're somewhere in the 70 to 80 range of people that are producing fish or have an aquaculture unit license. As far as aquaponic producers, I think there are about 4 or 5 in the state, but many people asking me questions every day about it, and more of them coming online in the near future.
Can you give me an idea of a setup that an aquaponic producer would use, or describe one that is actually in production now?
Sure. Generally speaking, these are facilities inside of greenhouses or high tunnels, and they will use a series of tanks for the fish culture section, and then the wastewater from those fish tanks goes through a clarifying tank where solids can be removed, and those can be composted off-site. And then from that tank, then the water goes into a mineralization tank where the nitrogen process takes place, turns the toxic ammonia that the fish produce into a nitrate that the plants can use. And from there, the water flows into the hydroponic portion of the facility where the plants will take up those nutrients and reduce the toxins in the water for the fish and recycle that water back into the fish culture area. And so it's a closed loop system, and because it's in a greenhouse environment, you have good control over diseases and temperature, and so you can grow year-round in a facility like that.
Which would be a tremendous advantage in Iowa, where, of course, the growing season is limited, but it also sounds like a really expensive setup.
It can be expensive. There's a lot of folks that are pretty crafty about building systems out of parts that they find laying around. Those IBC tanks or the chemical storage tanks are pretty popular set up for people to use as fish tanks. Of course, you have to take into consideration what has been in that tank if you're going to grab one of those and use that. Something like vinegar or olive oil or something fairly inert that's food safe would be a better option than something that was carrying pesticides for sure. So make sure and clean those things out. But you can buy PVC from the hardware store and create some channels, or use gutter systems to create channels to grow plants in, or create a floating rafts type system. There's things definitely you can get it from any of your local hardware stores to build an aquaponics system, but some of the nicer looking, more automated, professional type systems can be fairly expensive.
What kind of crops do you see being grown in this way right now?
As far as I've grown here on campus, I've grown some lettuces and some basils. A lot of, basically all of the leafy greens can be grown, all of the herbs, even vegetables like tomatoes and cucumbers and things like that. But we're also looking to see if we can perhaps try growing some trees in there.
Really?
Yeah, that's one of our future projects coming up.
And right now you're doing research to find out if this could be a viable business model?
That's correct. My research is looking at the sustainability aspects of aquaponics for Iowa. Most of the research that has been done on aquaponics was done in tropical areas like the Virgin Islands or in Hawaii. And they obviously have a lot better climate for growing plants all year round and using warmer weather fish. So we're trying to redefine aquaponics as a Midwestern system and look at the inputs that go into that and see if it's going to be economically viable in the future with minimal energy inputs.
Now, clearly we've made a lot of progress in the state as far as extending the growing season with high tunnels and that kind of thing. You're seeing garden fresh produce a lot more months out of the year than we used to be able to see them. This would extend the season year round. Who seems to be most interested in this?
There's a lot of local food markets that are very interested in these things. Co-ops around that produce local fresh foods, and also even white tablecloth restaurants around the Des Moines area are interested in having this very fresh product, this very high quality product, on a regular basis that can be delivered every week.
How soon do you think you'll know whether this is viable?
Well, I would imagine we could find some figures in the next year or so. As far as long-term viability, there hasn't really been any business, any aquaponics business in Iowa running for long enough to know for sure that it's going to be doable. But within 5 years, we should be able to have a pretty good idea of that.
Now, I can imagine people listening and thinking, well, I have a fish tank in my house, and I would love to have fresh greens. Do you see this as something that could be done on a very small scale in a person's home?
It is absolutely doable on a small scale. I actually have a system in my own home where I'm able to use aquarium water to grow about a 2 foot by 4 foot long growing area for aquaponics, and I'm growing lettuce and basil and everything like that in my own home, and it's doing rather well. So
wow,
it's absolutely something that's doable.
But tell me what that setup looks like.
Basically, there's a sump tank where I have a pump that kicks on every 30 minutes. It's on for 30 minutes, off for 30 minutes. That pumps water that's excess water from the fish tank up into a container that is specially designed for flood and drain hydroponic production. I'm actually using rock wool as a substrate. That's like fiberglass insulation, but it's made out of rock. And cubes that are about 4 inches by 4 inches by three or four inches tall, and just planting directly in those. And the water floods that area, and it drains out of that area every 30 minutes. And I have a halogen light fixture above that, and that's providing my lighting there. And Just on a continuous cycle, and it's working pretty well.
Where in your house do you have this?
It's actually in my basement.
All right. And you mentioned earlier using a raft system. Is that something that you could see in a home aquarium as well, putting a raft on top of an aquarium and creating synergy that way?
That could absolutely work, and in fact, that would probably be really good for your fish. If you were to cut out a styrofoam raft, say out of insulation material, and cut some holes, maybe 2-inch diameter, along the area of that raft, and plant some started seedlings in some net pots, and just dangle those directly into the water. The roots there, they'll grow straight into the water. The fish will have some extra munchies to nibble on, and keep your light just above there. And you can definitely grow some fish.
It may even look even prettier in the living room, right?
I think so.
All right. So the other question is, if you have an aquarium and you don't want to try to do anything hydroponically in your house, or if you have one of those garden ponds with a few koi in them, is that water we should be thinking about watering our plants with to maximize using those nutrients?
You can absolutely use that water to water your plants with, and it will apply some nutrient content to your soil there. And one thing to keep in mind, if you were to create an aquaponic system out of your pond with koi or whatever like that, you should filter that water first through, say, a sand filter like you would use on your pool. Just to get that extra algae out of the water, because that tends to clog up your pipes, but it's definitely something that's usable there.
Do you see this as something that is going to become a lot more common in the future?
I definitely see it as being a common occurrence in the future. It just makes a lot of sense. We're producing fish and plants. You can have them be ornamental fish even. You don't have to raise them for food. We could use koi or goldfish or anything like that, but just as far as having a garden that you can tend year-round, I think that works on the homeowner scale. It could work on more of a larger hobby scale for co-ops and things like that, or it is a model we're trying to build for commercial production.
Do you find that there are a lot of people asking questions about this? Are there a lot of people excited about the possibilities?
There's a lot of people excited about this, including everyone in this room right now.
All right. Well, Alan, thank you so much for being here. We're going to take a short break, and we'll get back to answering your questions about the plants in your life, aquaponically grown or not. Alan Patillo is with me today. He is Iowa State University Extension Aquaculture and Fisheries Specialist. Richard Giron will be joining us in just a moment, ISU Extension Horticulturist. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Iowa State University Extension Fisheries and Aquaculture Specialist Alan Patillo, and with us now, ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today, and of course, you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've been talking about aquaponics so far, which is the combination of hydroponics, growing crops without soil, and aquaculture, fish farming. Now, not everyone is going to have questions about that, of course, but if you do have questions, you're welcome to join the conversation. And if you have questions about any of the other plants in your life, give us a call, 866-780-9100. And we have this email from Jim in Ames. He wants to know if you could talk a little bit about the viability of crayfish, particularly the Louisiana red swamp crayfish, in a seasonal aquaculture or aquaponic setup. Alan?
Sure. It's interesting. I actually work with red claw crayfish for my master's work at Auburn University. And crayfish are definitely a species that you could put into that aquaponic system. One thing about red swamp crayfish is that you have to worry about them being very cannibalistic. So they will take care of each other before you get to eat them, probably. Yeah. But one thing that's really nice about them is those crayfish, they promote a little bit more root growth. One study that we're working with, a private company in northeast Iowa, we actually have the red claw crayfish in an aquaponics system and just looking at if we have better plant growth because of those crayfish. So, yeah, I think it would definitely be an advantage there. Those crayfish will eat a little bit of your plant roots, but just like pruning back a tree, you tend to have a little bit more growth after you prune it back. So as long as we don't have too many crayfish in there eating the roots, we should do pretty well.
All right. And we got an email from Tanya in Perry, who already has an aquaponic system in her house. I didn't realize that there are systems that you can buy. She says she got in on a Kickstarter account for one of these systems and will be receiving the 3-gallon in-home tank soon. I'm excited about it, and it's great that you can do a small version for home. I will mostly grow herbs or wheatgrass in the system. So there are many people excited about this. Here's a question for you, Richard. This is from Annie in Iowa City. Every spring, I'm plagued by baby maple trees in my garden. Is there anything I can do this year to prevent them from sprouting next year?
Basically, you could go out possibly in the fall or after they drop in the spring, depending on the species, and maybe rake them up, collect them, and get rid of them. But beyond that, not a great deal.
All right. You can give us a call with your questions at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Todd is on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Todd.
Hi, I had a question. What types of fish do best in an aquaponic system here locally? I have a 330-gallon IBC tote system I'm just setting up. And are there any local producers of tilapia? And if so, what type of tilapia would you recommend?
There are quite a few species of fish that will work in an aquaponic system. I'm currently using all-male Nile tilapia. And I bought those off of an aquaponics producer in Iowa. There are not any hatcheries for tilapia in Iowa as far as I'm knowledgeable about. However, I could get some information for you for some fish suppliers around the area if you would like to.
Sure.
Call me about that or email me about that later on. My phone number is 515-294-8616, 515-294-8616.
All right.
And do channel catfish work well on these, or?
That is actually our next species of interest. So I'll be getting some channel catfish later on in this summer and see how they do. I've heard people use them before, and they tend to work pretty well.
Great. Thanks.
All right, Todd, thanks a lot for your call, and you can join our conversation, 866-780-9100. Tori is on the line from Ionia. Hi, Tori.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have a question about my asparagus. I planted Jersey Supreme approximately 8 years ago.
Okay.
And quite often in the early spring, some of my spears will come up crooked, with like a vein in the side, and then they'll just curl up.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, they're not sellable. I just break them off and leave them in the bed.
Okay, discard them. Okay.
Correct. Cull them out, I guess.
Right. As far as why they do that, I'm not really sure on that. Possibly at some point they were injured as they were coming up, still on the ground. And because of that injury, then they just do not develop normally. So I don't think it's an insect. I don't think it's a disease, but I think it's some type of mechanical damage, and therefore they don't develop normally.
Could it be a frost damage?
It's possible, especially if we have some cold weather early in the spring where you might have some very cold temperatures, and it's possible that it might damage that spear as it's coming up out of the ground.
Okay. And another question. Now, last year I did have some insect damage where I had an insect crawling up the spear and chewing on the side of a spear, and it would damage the spear, and it would have to be culled as well.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a ground insect, or is that a flying insect?
The biggest problem that we typically have insect-wise would be the asparagus beetle,
okay,
which does feed on the actual spear. It also lays eggs on the spear. They're kind of dark gray. They're football-shaped. They kind of stick out from the actual spear, and they're not a problem, but obviously aesthetically they don't look good as far as being on the spear. But you can use insecticides if necessary if the damage is becoming significant, but normally the damage is fairly minor.
All right, Tori, thank you so much for your call. And next up, John is on the line in Davenport. Hi, John.
Hello. You're one of my favorite shows.
Oh, thanks. What's your question?
Well, I called in before about an African violet. My grandmother used to raise them, and I decided I wanted to raise one just to serve as a remembrance of her. And I talked to you before, and I was told I might be fertilizing it too much.
Okay.
And so I'm not fertilized. How much is too much?
Well, the key there is the concentration and the frequency. Basically, I would be using a dilute fertilizer solution. And
I use starts with an S. I can't think of it. Schnooks or Shooks or...
Okay, Schultz?
Schultz, that's
okay.
It.
Just make sure it's a dilute solution, and I would probably do that maybe every 2 to 4 weeks, especially in the spring and summer months. So basically maybe beginning in March or April and doing that through maybe September, October, and then maybe a little bit less frequently during the winter months.
Okay, so you think I'll ever have flowers?
Well, there's always hope. Also make sure they get plenty of light, because that's important too.
Yeah, I have plant light on them.
Okay. No direct light, but plenty of bright light.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay. All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. And you can join the conversation next at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We do have a few lines open right now for your call, so it's a great time to get in. 866-780-9100. And this is from Mark in Perry. I've been keeping aquariums for a few years. I know you need to use tap water conditioners to ensure that the water's safe for the fish. Are the conditioners safe if I wanted to use a raft-type system for aquaponics?
That's a good question. We are here in Ames using sodium sulfite in order to break up the chloramine that's in the water. The chloramine is a combination of chlorine gas and ammonia that's more stable in the water, and it tends to last a little bit longer, and it doesn't really have that flavor that you normally associate with chlorinated water. We have to apply, we're using about 5 grams of sodium sulfite powder in about 60 gallons of water in order to off-gas that, to break up the chloramine, and we have an aerator inside that head tank to release that chlorine into the atmosphere. And also we leave that water out of the system for at least 24 hours before we add it to the system to replace for evaporation. It hasn't been affecting our plants at all so far. It is sodium sulfite. The sulfur part of it really does the breaking up the chlorine. And sodium's not as bad for plant roots as, say, or the sodium's not as bad as chlorine is.
Okay.
Or chloride, rather.
All right. So the answer is...
It should be fine.
It should be okay. All right. This is a question from Lori for you, Richard. Could you review the problems with echinacea, yellowing, aborted green flowers, how to diagnose what you have and what to do about it?
Well, it could be either Aster's yellows or a very small little microscopic mite. And I guess if it were the Aster yellows, that's caused by a phytoplasma, which is a very unique organism, and there is no cure. And so those plants will do this forever. And your objective then is to simply dig it up and destroy the plant. Now, if it's a mite, it's a temporary thing, hopefully. And I guess one way to try to figure that out would be if you see a plant that's doing this where it has these deformed green flowers that look really strange, is to deadhead them and then see if they bloom again later that year. And if they do, are they normal or the same thing? And if they keep on doing this repeatedly, then the evidence becomes more strong that it's basically the aster yellows rather than the mite.
Okay. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Another email, this one's from Bob. I want to plant ground cover on a large hillside near our home. Would Vinca minor be a good option? And are there any thoughts on planting these as bare root plants?
Vinca minor on a big slope, probably not. If it were sunny, I would actually go with native grasses and wildflowers. To me, that would be the logical thing. If it's a big area, sunny slope, that could be very attractive, low maintenance once it's established. So that would be my thought. If it were a shady area, they can go with various ground covers like Lily of the Valley. You have hostas would be a nice ground cover, creeping lily turf, spotted dead nettle. So there are a number of things that you could do. You could also maybe go with some of the native wildflowers, too. That would be another option where you have things like woodland phlox, bloodroot, Solomon seal, false Solomon seal, mayapple, that type of thing.
Okay. Thanks a lot for your question, Bob. And let's get back to the phones at 866-780-9100. Eric is on the line from Clive. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is about my white pines and the candles that are growing. I've heard that if I want to stop that, I can actually pinch those off. And if that's true, when should I do that? Should I do it right away or wait till they're full grown or what?
Right. If you want to slow their growth rate, what you can do is when the candles are 2 to 3 inches long, go out there with your fingers and just pinch off the outer half of that candle. And that will reduce the growth by half. So when they're 2 to 3 inches long, just pinch out the outer half.
Okay. Now, if I pinch it back all the way, would that just stop that growth on that branch?
Well, you don't really want to do that. So you'd like to maybe slow the growth. So at most, I would say half, maybe 3/4.
Okay. But wait till they're about 3 inches long.
Right, 2 to 3 inches long, right.
Okay.
Which should happen fairly quickly.
Yeah, I know. They're getting close right now.
Right.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Eric. Thanks a lot for your call. And we've got a couple of asparagus questions next. Dean is on the line from Clary. And hi, Dean.
Hi there. My question is, I've got an asparagus patch. It's got broadleaf weeds coming in, thistles, milkweeds, and dandelions. And I'm wondering if there's a herbicide that's safe for me to use that won't harm the asparagus.
Normally, it's basically physical labor when you're dealing with weeds, basically hoeing and hand pulling. One option would be to use Roundup. You only get one chance to do that, though. So basically, it would be in early to mid-June when you make your last harvest.
Okay.
At that point, go out there and cut every single asparagus stalk that's above ground level. Just below the ground. So when you're done, there's not a single asparagus stalk above ground level. Then go out and spot treat with the Roundup, and you should be okay. But you only get one chance to do that. Otherwise, it's basically hoeing and hand pulling, unfortunately.
So, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Dean. And next up, John is on the line in Clear Lake. Hi, John.
Hello. I'm interested in establishing asparagus at my home acreage. And my question is, can I transplant, the wild asparagus that's, like in the ditches and such to my home, and how would I go about that?
It's actually very difficult to transplant growing asparagus plants because the crown is so large, it's so deep, the root system. So usually it doesn't work very well. Usually if you do that or try that, it's not very successful. So we kind of discourage it. The best way to establish it is to buy plants. Typically, those are 1 or 2 year old plants that you buy. And we would suggest one of the male cultivars because they're more productive. Things like Jersey Knight, Jersey Supreme, those do very, very well. But transplanting is very, very difficult. It's usually not very successful, no.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, John. And we'll see if we can answer this question before the break from Kathy in Des Moines. We live in a neighborhood with many older oaks. Now we have a couple of little bur oak seedlings coming up in inconvenient places. Can those be transplanted and will they flourish? They range from 3 to 6 feet tall.
They definitely can. The smaller, the better. And you want to do that basically either in the fall after leaf drop or early in the spring before they break bud. I would prefer early spring on that. And when you do that, dig them up with a nice ball of dirt around the root system. And like I said, the smaller they are, the better.
All right. Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll be right back to answer more of your questions. And you can join the conversation. 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. You can also send questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and ISU Extension aquaculture and fisheries specialist Alan Petillo. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Mostly sunny in Iowa now, sort of a cool day ahead, highs just in the mid-60s to the low 70s today. Weather history in Iowa, May 24th, 1989, several tornadoes hit Iowa, including one that produced F4 damage at Traer and several others that were produced by a long-lived storm that traveled from Corning to west of Davis City. One of those tornadoes reached a width of nearly a mile just east of Corning near Prescott back in 1989. Going back to 1896, a violent tornado produced F4 damage as it tore a path across northern Polk County and into northwestern Jasper County. 20 fatalities, 60 injured in that storm in 1896. And in 1859, a large tornado just missed Iowa City between 6 and 7 in the evening, killing 5 people and injuring 18 a few miles south of Iowa City, May 24th, 1859. Coming up at 11, Fresh Air and the River to River today at 12 noon on Iowa Public Radio.
Support comes from WineFest Des Moines, with events beginning June 2nd and culminating June 8th at the 11th Annual Grand Tasting, an evening of hors d'oeuvres and fine wine at Capitol Square. Tickets and details are at winefestdesmoines.com.
So she walks over the car, and with crazy Hulk-like postpartum strength, rips off the side view mirror and throws it on the ground and said, "Now we're even."
Join us for this story and more next time on the Moth Radio Hour from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
2 o'clock Sunday afternoon on Iowa Public Radio.
Support comes from Paul McAndrew, looking out for the injured worker for over 25 years and joining others in support of public radio. Paul McAndrew Law Firm, with offices in Coralville or online at paulmcandrew.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. And with me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran. We also have ISU Extension aquaculture and fisheries specialist Alan Petillo with us today. We've been talking about aquaponics, which is hydroponics, growing crops without soil, paired with aquaculture, which is fish farming, so using that wastewater from fish farming to grow crops, which seems to be a growing interest in the state of Iowa. You can call with your questions about any of the plants in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Alan, we've got another question for you. This is from Sarah. What are your thoughts about adding chicken manure into the aquaponics cycle to feed the fish?
I really wouldn't go with that simply because of the possibility for E. coli in the water. I would tend to lean more towards an inorganic phosphorus fertilizer rather than using the chicken manure.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Mary's on the line from West Des Moines. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What's your question?
My question is, a couple of years ago, we planted 3 apple trees of different varieties in our backyard, and I was just wondering when we can expect to see some apples start growing.
Are these dwarf or semi-dwarf or standard?
I believe they're standard.
Okay. If they're standard, it may be 4, 5, 6 years before they start to flower and bear fruit. So a little bit later than dwarf or semi-dwarf.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Mary, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Colin is on the line in Rockwell City. Hi, Colin.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have 2 varieties of short-needled pine trees. One's soft and one's kind of brittle to the feel. And anyhow, they're getting too long. I can't mow underneath them without battling the tree. What's the best time of year to cut those low-hanging branches off?
You can actually almost do that any time during the year if you wish. So it doesn't really matter that much. At this point, they're just starting to grow or break bud. So you may want to wait till maybe, let's say, July to do that. But you can do it almost any time during the year.
Great. Well, thank you for your answer. Appreciate it.
All right, Colin, thanks a lot for your call. And you can join the conversation as well at 866-780-9100. Back to some email questions. This is from Jim in Illinois. He says, I have an ornamental pear that is about 10 years old. I've noticed that the tree is dropping a lot of leaves already. Some of the leaves still on the tree are small and crinkled, and some have black areas. Is this a case of blight, and what can I do about it?
Boy, good question. I'm not sure. The main problem with the pears would be fire blight, but that does not sound like fire blight, because with fire blight, the leaves turn totally dark brown, but they hang on the actual tree. So I wonder possibly if there maybe was some cold injury damage this spring, because we did have some cold weather. We did have the snow in May, and possibly as it was leafing out or the buds were developing, maybe it was exposed to some cold weather, which caused some damage, which is resulting in some of the leaf drop possibly.
Okay. And so if that's what it is, will it be okay next year?
Well, then it should be a temporary thing, and it should stop fairly soon.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Katie is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Katie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What's your question?
I have a question about planter boxes. I have a couple of them on an east-facing window, and I'd like to do some herbs and some leafy greens in there, but I was wondering what kind of flowers would be best to put with those so that it's not just green in front of my window.
Well, you could put in a number of things. You could put in petunias, marigolds, geraniums. They do terrific. Impatiens. Any of those would be fine.
All right, great. Thank you.
All right, Katie, thanks a lot for your call. And let's do another email question here. This is from Emily in Hampton, Illinois. I have a question regarding some evergreen trees I have. I think they're Norway spruce. The lower branches are starting to die. There is no noticeable disease or insect damage. The upper part of the tree still looks healthy and is growing, but more and more of the lower branches die each year. What should I do?
Well, if you said that was a Colorado spruce, I would say it might have rhizosphere needle cast, which is a very common disease on that tree. We don't see it much on Norway spruce, but with rhizosphere needle cast, the first thing you see is the lower branches become thinner because they have fewer needles, and over time they die, and so the lowest branches die first, and then it very slowly works upward. So that's classic symptoms for rhizosphere needle cast. So if it might be a Colorado spruce, that would be my thought.
Okay. And you can join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can also email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Ron is on the line next in Davenport. Hi, Ron.
You're welcome.
Hi, Ron. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Sure am. Not so much of a question, but a comment to thank Alan. I think he worked with one of our teachers, Kevin Rowling, at Bettendorf Middle School. We've started a aquaponics project growing lettuce in the 6th grade science classroom. So,
oh, how
thanks
cool.
for a great project. To
well, that's
get the
fantastic.
Kids started.
I'm glad to hear it.
Also, I want to make a comment. The maple seedlings in the garden, what I did to prevent those was use landscaping mat and just cut around my plants. And if in case the seedlings do fall near where my plant stems are, I just take a shop vac and vacuum them up, and the rest of them can't feed over the landscaping mat.
All right.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Ron.
Good idea.
Annie may implement that in her garden. That's very inventive. All right, our next call is Becca from Ames. Hi, Becca.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I purchased some orchids a while ago at an orchid show that were set in moss. I think it's sphagnum moss. And the moss has become really brittle, and I think it's dead. And I was wondering how I would go about replacing the moss, or if I need to be specific to the species or genus.
You say this is moss, not kind of like wood chips or...
It's moss, yeah.
Okay. Hmm. I guess I don't have a good answer to that. I would probably be looking at more traditional bark type mixes for orchids. Typically, they work the best.
Yeah, I think they said that the moss is good because it retains moisture. But I have other orchids that are set in more dry bark kind of stuff. But
okay.
Well, thanks. Anyways.
Well, and was it sphagnum peat moss? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
And it was actually growing?
No, but it was green when I purchased the orchids.
Okay.
But I think the frequency of watering the orchids and the moss isn't the same. I'm not sure. I've never seen it before or since, but they're still alive. I don't know if I need to replace it or not.
Now, there's sphagnum peat moss and there's sphagnum moss, and they are different. The sphagnum peat moss is what you find in these compressed bales at the garden center, and that material is a dark kind of reddish brown. And then you have the sphagnum moss, which is more stringy. It kind of reminds me of what you would see hanging from a tree in the south.
Yes,
kind of grayish, green color.
Yes,
Yeah, you can actually buy that at garden centers. That is used to kind of air layer some plants, like house plants, and it's used for that purpose. It does hold quite a bit of moisture, and you can actually buy that at garden centers, but you want to buy sphagnum moss, not sphagnum peat moss.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
All right, Becca, thanks a lot for your call, and we probably still have time for a couple more calls on the line at 866-780-9100. Marcy wanted to respond to the orchid question. Hi, Marcy.
Hi. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
Yeah, what's your idea?
Well, I have a lot of orchids myself, and I talked to some orchid growers, and I had the same question several years ago, and one of the master guys that was on the orchid show, he actually told me that sphagnum moss, and you want to keep that in there and don't replant it until your blooms are gone. You can put it in the bark, but it holds the moss holds more moisture, and it will get brittle when it's dry, but all you need to do is wet it again. Oh. That's all you need to do.
Okay. All right, Marcy, thanks a lot for your call.
You're welcome.
All right. We're all learning something about orchids today. And Joseph is on the line next from Bluegrass. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, yeah, I'm from Bluegrass, Iowa.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got a couple of decorative trees that were on the property when I bought it. And they have lots of green foliage, and in the spring they have little white flowers, and then they all turn to berries. But I'm getting this fungus all over this tree that you'd almost think there were worms in there, but it turns very hard, and it eats right into the limbs, and then the limbs are dead. Is it too late to do anything about it?
Now, you say you have this fungus. What does that so-called fungus look like? Is it kind of grayish green?
Kind of a grayish green, and then it turns black.
Okay.
And it just eats right into the limbs, and you can grab a hold of it and just snap the little limb right off.
Okay. My first thought would be lichens, but lichens are basically harmless. They're kind of grayish green. You will find them on the branches of larger trees, on the trunks of trees. They're more numerous on dead branches because there's no foliage there. But they actually don't harm the tree. So I'm not sure exactly what you're seeing. Sometimes we'll see wood decay type fungi when you have a rot in a tree where the wood is actually decaying. You'll see those, but they appear once the rot has actually developed. So I'm not sure exactly what you're seeing.
Some of these things are 3 and 4 inches long.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So it sounds like it might be some type of wood decay type fungus where you had some rot developing and now you're seeing this fungal growth. So what you could do to kind of verify that, if you can take some good digital photographs with a camera.
Yes.
And then send those to Iowa State. We can have a look at that. And you would send that to Hortline, Hortline, at iastate.edu. And we can have a look at that and see what they are.
Yes, I'll do that. And I can look all that up on the internet then for to send that in.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, Joseph, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we'll go to Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay, I've got an Austrian pine tree, and I've got actually got 6 of them, but on one of them, it lacks the center spear, you know, of growth coming right out of the center that's kind of the pointer. And is there anything I can do to, like, maybe tie one of the other branches over to see if it would take over?
You definitely could. How big is the tree?
It's probably 15 foot tall.
Oh, 15 foot tall. You could try doing that. I think it will do that by itself, or at least try to. And if it does, it may have or may form several, 2 or 3. And then if it does that, then remove all but one.
Okay. It hasn't. The ice is what took it out a couple years ago. And it just hasn't done it on its own yet, and I was wondering if there was anything I could do to help it.
Yeah, I think it will on its own if it was the very top. I think it will eventually, yes.
Okay, Mike, thanks a lot for your call. Terrence is up next from Coggin. Hi, Terrence. Terrence, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Terrence, we seem to be having trouble hearing you. Is your radio on?
Oh, sorry. Hello?
Hi. You know what? I'm afraid we can't hear you. Hang up and try to call back again, 866-780-9100. Joy is on the line next from West Des Moines. Hi, Joy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a north side of my house that had some mold in the basement due to a lot of water that comes down in that part of the yard. And right up against the side of the house, it was I was told that if I planted some bushes with some large roots, that would help take up some of that water. And I was hoping for some low-growing ones. What kind of bushes would be best for that type of situation?
Well, I'm not sure that's really going to help that much if you do that. You could put in some shrubs there, but I really don't think that's going to help much as far as the water situation. As far as shrubs, those plants that do well in the shade, you could plant things like fragrant sumac, possibly bush honeysuckle, possibly yews. But I really don't think they're going to absorb enough water to really benefit that much.
Oh, okay. All right. Is there anything else you might recommend then for that?
Well, I think that's more of a construction issue as far as drainage issue. You may have to get a contractor and maybe do that type of thing.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, Joy. Thanks a lot for your call. And I think our final question of the day is from Tyler in Iowa City on email. Over the winter and earlier this spring, the strawberries spread throughout our garden, taking over a lot of space. Is it possible to transplant those to planters or strawberry boxes? And if so, what's the best way to ensure they stay healthy and produce fruit?
Well, you can transplant. The ideal time to do that would be early spring, probably mid to late April, early May. Doing it later becomes more difficult as we get hotter in the year. And if I was starting a new bed, though, I would actually buy plants because new plants are likely to be certified disease-free. Some of the older plants may not be.
So. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for your questions today. Richard Geron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron and Alan Patillo, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
I learned a lot. Alan Patillo, ISU Extension Aquaculture and Fisheries Specialist, Horticulture Day, will be back again next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Technical support today from Jason Burns. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's a holiday weekend, so we won't be back till Tuesday, but on Tuesday I'll be here with best-selling author Benjamin Percy and his new novel Red Moon. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.